Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karmateksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Shantideva and the Path of Love, Part 3, by Lama Cathy Wesley. Once we begin to train our minds through meditation and mindfulness, we become keenly aware of how our own prejudices get in the way of our love and compassion. Lama Cathy reviews compassion meditation techniques and shows us how to expand this practice beyond our meditation seat, taking the practice into our daily lives. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karmateksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Thanks for joining today. I'm happy to be with you again from my place, and really happy to be addressing the continuing topic of Shantideva and the Path of Love. So today we're going to be talking a little bit about how to put love into action, which is, I guess, right now is a theme that we are all needing to know a little bit more about. With all of the things that have been going on, as we mentioned and talked about last week briefly, about the problems that we're facing as a society, recognizing institutionalized racism in our country, and all of the peaceful protests that are going on in cities around the United States, asking for compassion and justice. And so it seems to me that this is the best time ever to talk about the path of compassion and how to bring compassion into action. So I'm going to begin with a short prayer in the Tibetan language, and you can join in your heart and mind, whether you are familiar with the prayer or not. You can kind of join in with your heart and mind and make the aspiration that our time together today will be useful and beneficial for the benefit of all sentient beings. O Sanje Chodong Sochi Chonam La Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyap Suchi Daji Chin Soji Pe Sunam Ki Drola Pinchu Sanje Truparsho. And then the prayer of the four immeasurables. Senjen Tamje Tewa Tan Tewe Gyutan Tempar Gyuchik Dunga Tang Dugnagi Chutan Trawar Chuchik Dunya Mepe Tewa Dampa Tam Hintrawar Chuchik Nerin Chandan Hidan Drawe Tam Yen Chen Pola Nepa Jurechi. And lastly, a prayer asking for the presence of our teachers. O Palin Sawelam Ha Rinpoche Dagi Chiwar Pede Ten Shula Kadrin Jembo Gwane Che Sunte Kusun Tugging Utrup Sal Duso. Okay, thank you. Once again, welcome. I hope you've had a good week and that you're all feeling and doing well. So last time we talked in general about the Buddhist teaching on compassion and how the Buddhist teaching on compassion and training the mind and love and compassion, how those teachings help us to accomplish changes in our life that we need to make. If you remember from our discussion of the Four Noble Truths of the Buddha, he said that suffering was part of life, suffering had a cause, suffering has a solution, and there's a path that leads to the end of suffering. And if we remember from our teaching on the Second Noble Truth, the Buddha said that the cause of suffering was clinging and fixation. And so if we want to resolve clinging and fixation in our lives, one of the things we can do is learn how to let go, learning how to let go of the clinging and fixation that we experience in our lives. And that according to the teachings, one of the best ways to do that is to practice mindfulness, which includes the practice of meditation. the Buddha's teachings on how to act in the world and be in the world are fourfold. Do no harm, practice virtue, tame your mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. The last one means there is no other, look no further. And the first one is do no harm, which means don't harm yourself and don't harm others. And the second is take care of yourself and benefit others. And the third is taming the mind. Because if we can tame the mind through our practice of meditation, then we'll be able to be present with ourselves and to be present with others and be able to determine and tell the difference between harm and benefit. So that's where we've gone so far. And we talked about the last time we talked about the aspiration of the bodhisattva, which is a person who lives their life in service to others. And we talked about how the bodhisattva aspiration is taken in the practice called the taking of the bodhisattva vow, in which a person goes in front of a preceptor and says, I will train as the Buddhas of the past have trained. And so by doing this and training as the Buddhas of the past have trained, what is it that we're training in? We're training in love, compassion, and bodhicitta. Bodhi means awakening and citta means mind. So the mind that wants to wake up, the mind of bodhicitta, is what we are training in. And so it's my hope that these classes have helped you to take a little bit of a look inside and have shown you the importance of quiet sitting meditation as a way of calming the mind and centering the mind, and also the practice of compassion meditation. Whether we practice the metta meditation of imagining in meditation that we send peace and goodness and happiness to all beings, or if we practice the tonglen, the sending and receiving meditation of the Tibetan tradition, where on the out-breath we imagine we give happiness to others, and on the in-breath we think that we remove their suffering and that it dissolves into our Buddha nature and disappears. So these types of meditation are ways to practice mindfulness, but also practice compassion. Sometimes we don't feel natural compassion for people. There are some people who are just outside the fence, if you want to put it that way, of our compassion. And so these are people we have to actually develop extra compassion and love for, because they're somehow distant from us. Maybe we don't agree with them about the way the world is, or maybe we don't agree with their personal activities or the things they've done, but we can at least feel some compassion for their humanity and their flaws and their brokenness, and find ways to communicate with them in ways that we can understand their needs and their brokenness and help them find a path to wholeness again. So this is what we discussed in the last couple of weeks. We're using as our guide the book, The Way of the Bodhisattva by Shantideva. The Way of the Bodhisattva by Shantideva has been around for a very long time. And it's written in the 8th century. And in this book, Shantideva teaches us how to take the path of the bodhisattva and how to change ourselves from the inside out. It starts with the wish to benefit all sentient beings, which, as we talked about last time, is not just a wish. It's something where we recognize that other beings are just like us, and recognizing that they're just like us, we know that they want happiness just like we want happiness. And by recognizing that we and others both want happiness, we attempt to develop feelings of kinship with them, feelings that they're just like us and we want to be part of their process and part of their, I guess you could say, their healing in this world. So what do we do? How do we make the wish turn into action? This is a problem, because having a wish and then taking no action on it is incomplete. And so what we need to do is we need to find a path of action, of compassionate action. And by taking this path of compassionate action, we will be able to, I guess the right word is, we'll be able to actualize the dream of benefiting others. So, but that path of action, it may not seem easy at first, but according to the teachings of the Buddha, the main practice that we are doing is in the path of action bodhicitta is it's summarized by the six perfect virtues, and the six perfect virtues are a list of things that if we do these practices, we will become more like the Buddha and less like our egoistic selves. Because if you remember from our discussion last time of the Four Noble Truths, the cause of suffering is clinging and fixation. And the thing that we cling to and fixate on the most is our sense of self, me or I. And that clinging to self is such a strong and insidious force that it seems to pervade just about everything that we could think, say, or do. And so how do we counteract ego fixation? How do we counteract this clinging to self in a way that doesn't harm us? Because a lot of people, when they hear about the teachings of compassion, they have some enthusiasm for the idea, but they are a little bit worried about what might happen if they practice compassion too much, as though you could be too compassionate. But the idea is that people want to practice compassion, but they don't want to invite others to harm them. In other words, they don't want to give others the opportunity to address them with hatred or anger. They want to be able to defend themselves if they're attacked and so forth and so on. And they're afraid that if they develop too much empathy or too much compassion, that they'll somehow be labeled as weak or be seen as a person that could be taken advantage of. So, to me, the understanding compassion and wisdom, the two sides of the bodhisattva's practice, is important. The bodhisattva has to be compassionate, but the bodhisattva also has to be wise. And by wise, it means that one does not merely accept abuse, but helps to connect to the person and find ways to say no to them and to say no to their abuse in a way that the other can actually hear and see. So hopefully the practice of love and compassion doesn't necessarily mean a person is weak. It actually means a person is strong, because one of the teachings in the Buddhist literature of the in the text called the Eight Stanzas of Thought Transformation. In the Eight Stanzas of Thought Transformation, it says we should accept defeat for ourselves and give all victory to others. Now, this may sound a little bit unwise because we don't want bad people to win. But what we have to understand is that the meaning of victory in this sense is a sense of we want to give the victory to others, meaning we don't want to retaliate when bad things happen to us. We don't want to blame or retaliate. This doesn't mean that we don't call out injustice. We can do that. We can actually call out injustice, and calling out injustice is compassionate. So that's something that we can do while remaining compassionate. But we have to do so in a way that doesn't cause us to become the thing that we dislike, doesn't cause us to become a bully, doesn't cause us to become a person who harms others with a sense of anger or hatred or resentment. And so how do we act compassionately with wisdom? Because we need to act compassionately, but we also need to be wise. As one of my Lama friends once said, just because you're compassionate doesn't mean you have to be wrong-headed. What he said was, he said, it's never wrong to tell someone to stop hurting you. Therefore, this means that being a bodhisattva means having the courage to know one's own mind, to know one's own limitations, and also then to act in whatever way we can to slowly push out the boundaries of our own limitations so that we can become more loving and compassionate inside. If we enumerate the six perfect virtues, they are given in several different orders, but the order that I learned was the first of the of the six transcendent virtues is generosity. The second is ethics and morality. The third is patience. The fourth is diligence. The fifth is meditation, and the sixth is wisdom. So if we are generous, if we're generous, then it's easy to be ethical. And if we're generous and ethical, it's easy to be patient. If we're generous, ethical, and patient, it's easy to be diligent in our spiritual practice. And if we are generous, ethical, patient, and diligent, meditation becomes simple. And if we are generous, ethical, patient, diligent, and meditate well, then wisdom is the result. So this is how the six perfect virtues build upon one another. The first of all of these is generosity. If you remember from our discussion of the Four Noble Truths, that the second noble truth, the truth of the cause of suffering, is that the cause of suffering is clinging and fixation. In other words, holding on. And what is the central theme of the practice of generosity? Opening one's hand, letting go, and giving. So it seems to me that the first of the transcendent virtues, being generosity, is perfect, because when we are able to let go of our self-fixation, we're able to give things to others that they need. For example, all of us know people in our lives who have a difficult time. We might call them unhappy individuals. We might call them lonely individuals. And there are a lot of people who feel isolated right now, and they're really going through a lot between the COVID-19 pandemic and all of the unrest and the protests. Some people feel a little bit isolated and hemmed in. And so as a result, it might be a generous thing to do to actually call that person up and talk to them and be generous with your time. Say to them, "Hi, how are you?" And then be willing to be generous with your time and your energy to listen to them, to what they have to say. And so as a result, generosity doesn't only mean, oh, I'm going to give somebody my money, or I'm going to give somebody food, or I'm going to give somebody something else. Some of the times that we are generous, we're generous with our patience and with our kindness and with our time. And the reason that generosity is so important is because one of the things that is so damaging about self-fixation is that we unwittingly begin to feel that we're superior to others. And in thinking that we're superior to others, we think that our needs are greater than their needs. And so then when we think that our needs are greater than the needs of others, then sometimes we'll push them out of the way, or we might actually harm them as we're attempting to get happiness for ourselves or the things that we feel that we need. And so being generous with others is a way of counteracting that tendency to feel superior. In the book, The Jewel Ornament of Liberation, Gampopa describes three different kinds of generosity. And there is the generosity with material things. There is the generosity that's called giving fearlessness. And then there's the generosity that's called giving the Dharma, or giving truth. And each of these is a way of developing our selflessness and a reduction of our selfishness. Giving of physical things that people need, food, shelter, and so on. The second is giving fearlessness. Giving fearlessness may sound a little bit strange, but the way it's explained in the Buddhist texts is that by helping those who are in danger, we are helping them to have less fear. So let's say that we save an animal that is that's crawling in the road, or that we help us in a scene that we have to go and take Dharma books and go preach on the street corners. It's not like that. The giving of Dharma is mostly through our own example, through doing our best to be kind and compassionate ourselves. I mean, I fall short. Everybody falls short. We are all not at our best 100% of the time every day, but we just keep trying, and we just keep picking ourselves up when we fall. And so being able to try and be kind and generous when we can, and try to be understanding of others who can't manage it, I think that's really helpful. It's a way of teaching the Dharma without words. And so if we're generous like this, our ego fixation gets just a little bit smaller. And this leads us to the second of the six perfect virtues, which is ethics and morality. Ethics really comes down to those statements of the Buddha: do no harm and practice virtue. In the Buddha's teachings, they talk about the 10 unskillful actions that a person should avoid: killing and stealing and sexual misconduct, as well as lying, as well as divisive speech, as well as harsh speech and meaningless chatter, and also that one should avoid ill will, feeling ill will against others. One should not espouse views that are contrary to the truth, meaning like you would go to say to someone, no, I don't believe in karma. I think you could do and harm and do whatever you want without worrying about karma. Karma isn't real. These kinds of things are very hard on your mind. So, and then the last one is the last of the negative actions is wanting what others have. So you see, we have these 10 non-virtuous actions. So we have to do our best to avoid those. And it's also important to do our best to avoid holding grudges against people or holding resentments against people. And I know that might seem difficult in these modern times when hatred is so far pervasive in our culture and our media and so forth. People might think, well, it's okay if I get mad at people and hold a grudge because those people are bad and these people are good and I have to hate the people who are bad and so on. But what we don't see is that hatred actually impacts us and it changes us and it makes us into someone who could actually harm others. And so what we have to remember is that by nursing a grudge or holding a resentment, we're not accomplishing anything but harming our own body, speech, and mind. Medical science has studied anger, hatred, and resentment and says that people who freely give rein to their anger, hatred, and resentment actually have higher levels of negative hormones in the body that actually age you faster and make you sick. So what we have to find a way to do is we have to find a way to give out love instead of hate. I have to tell a little story on the side here. I am, as you know, a consumer of pop culture, and I am a fan of the comedian Trevor Noah. And I will always remember his stand-up routine where he talks about his mother and how he was raised by his mother and grandmother in South Africa in very difficult times when apartheid was part of society. And he would ask his mother, how can you deal with all of these people calling you names in the street? And his mother said, well, it's pretty easy. She said, it's because I am a Christian and I believe in the love of Jesus and I have the love of Jesus in my heart. And so what I do is I take their hate and I mix it with the love of Jesus in my heart and I give it back to them as peaceful speech. When I heard this, this was actually told as part of a comedy routine. This story was told as a part of a joke. I was very touched by this. And I think it's because it's true. It's a true form of ethics. It's a true form of ethics that understands that when hate is coming at you, it's coming from a place of pain in the other person. And that if one can develop the heart of bodhicitta, whether you call it the heart of Jesus or the heart of bodhicitta, if one can develop that kind of love, then one can do tonglen, or which is taking and then sending, taking in their dislike and their difficulty, and then giving back goodness and light, which is why the practice of sending and receiving meditation is so powerful for training our bodhisattva motivation. So an understanding of ethics from this point of view means that we understand that when we cause harm to others, we're actually harming ourselves. And so we have to do our best to be ethical in all of our behavior and try not to harm others so that we don't actually inadvertently harm ourselves. The third of the perfect virtues is patience. And my teacher, Kepa Carter Rinpoche, really believed in patience. And in fact, he told us on more than one occasion, he said, you can overcome everything and everyone with patience. And he really believed this. And he was endlessly patient with all of us because we didn't grow up Buddhist. We didn't understand Buddhism, but he patiently explained it again and again and again, all of the things that we needed to know. And so patience basically has several types, but the main type that's worth discussing is the type of patience that is forbearance in difficult times. We need to understand the Buddhist teaching on impermanence, which says, this too shall pass. In other words, whatever is going on now will not last forever. It will always change. Therefore, when negative things are happening, pain and suffering and all of these kinds of terrible things that are going on, these too shall pass. And to get angry about them in such a way that we lose our peace of mind and we lose our inner stability and serenity and give ourselves over to anger and hatred. If we can be patient and know that everything is always on the move and always changing, that means that the future is not necessarily a dark time. It could actually be a time of possibility. And so being able to hold one's own love and for oneself and for others as the as what holds us up in times of impatience, this is really important. If you remember from the way of the Bodhisattva, in the first chapter, verse 5 and 6, where he talks about how rare goodness is. In the sixth verse, he says, except for perfect bodhicitta, there is nothing able to withstand the great and overwhelming strength of evil. And so bodhicitta, this heart of awakening, is how we train ourselves in patience. And I'm looking at Shantideva here. He says, there are so many different ways to practice the patience. And he says here, one of the things we should ask is not why evil people are treating us badly now, but rather, why did I do evil in the past? Because at some point, as my friends in 12-step like to say, there, but for the grace of God, go I, meaning I could be that person who is treating others cruelly. And if I don't accept the fact that in other situations, I would also be the person who causes harm. He says, why should I be angry now? Because I have harmed so many in the past. Why do I not think about that? And so there are so many different ways to consider patience, but the main way to consider it is to have the feeling that one is going to do one's best not to be pushed into anger. And if we can act like that, then our generosity and our ethical behavior will lead us into being patient even in difficult times. The fourth of the perfect virtues is diligence. And what he means by diligence here is diligence in spiritual cultivation, not in diligence, the kind of diligence we usually have, which is to amass more and more objects and people and feelings and experiences to amass more things. It's that not that kind of diligence. It's the diligence in calming and letting our mind come to rest and calm down. And then also having the sense that we are going to be diligent in trying to work on our compassion meditation, whether it's the metta practice or the sending and receiving practice. Being diligent in our practice means that we will recognize that that laziness in all of its forms is a luxury we can't afford. there are three kinds of laziness that keep us from doing our spiritual practice. You know, I hear about this from people all the time. They say, oh, meditation, that sounds good. Compassion practice, that sounds good, but I'm just busy. I have too much to do. And so in this way, we sort of dampen our diligence. Or we say, I could be patient today, but I'd really rather not be patient today because that other person on the internet just really made me mad and I want to give them a piece of my mind. You know, so we're not diligent in practicing compassion and we're not diligent in practicing meditation because there's always something else to do. And the three kinds of laziness, as they're described by Gampopa in his book, The Jewel Ornament of Liberation, is there's the laziness of indolence, meaning one just likes to lie around and not do meditation. The second kind is the laziness of busyness. That is one of my favorites, where I'm so busy that I have no time to do my meditation. I have no time to practice compassion. And then why do I wonder why I get angry and feel impatient when I haven't been practicing my centering and my meditation and my compassion? Why should I be surprised that I become impatient and lose my temper? So in the practice of diligence, we try to counteract these by doing our dharma practice in a small amount that is something that's doable by us every day. But I forgot that there is a third type of laziness, and that's the third type of laziness is the laziness that is self-doubt or self-denigration. The laziness that is self-doubt and self-denigration is where we say, I'm too confused, or Dharma is too complex. I could never understand it. I could never practice it. And one basically gives up on one's spiritual development and says, it's just this lifetime. I'm going to sit this lifetime out and take it easy. These types of laziness are what prevents us from getting on our meditation seat when we know it's the very best thing to do for ourselves. And so to counteract these, we need to uplift our sense of possibility, remind ourselves that we have Buddha nature, remind ourselves that we have the potential to wake up, and remind ourselves that the practices of quiet sitting meditation and compassion meditation are what really allows us to transform in this life. And those of you who have already heard the teachings about how to practice compassion in everyday life know that one of the best ways to practice compassion in everyday life is contained in the mind training slogan, three objects, three poisons, three seeds of virtue. In the practice of mind training, of Mahayana mind training in Buddhism, it says you, even when you're not sitting on your cushion, you can practice love and compassion. Even in your everyday life, you can practice love and compassion by remembering to notice when you're feeling negative mental afflictions, to notice it, label it, and then transform it. And so what a person would do, for example, is if you are watching television and you see the news and it upsets you, to actually stop, halt right then. If you're feeling, what was the word halt? What did it mean for the 12-step tradition? Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. When you begin to feel negative mental afflictions, you have to stop and identify what it is that you're feeling. And then after you've identified what you're feeling, then universalize it by thinking, oh my gosh, there are so many people on the planet right now who are feeling this exact same thing. And my heart goes out to not just myself feeling this, but all of them feeling it too. May all of us be free of it. So we then make it into an aspiration. We notice it and label it. We universalize it and think others are experiencing it too. And then we turn all of that into an aspiration for goodness. May I be free of this. May all beings be free of this. And so in that way, we can diligently practice even when we are not on our meditation seats. So if we practice meditation, I mean, diligence in this way, then meditation becomes very easy. It's very easy to get on your meditation seat when you're diligent. And when you practice meditation, and you practice it deeply, you will find, I guess it's like a, what do they say? It's like peeling the layers off the onion. You'll find more and more layers of mental afflictions to peel off, and more possibilities for practicing love and compassion in the moment. And by practicing meditation, not just on your meditation seat, but in your everyday life in this way, slowly selfishness will get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, and one's compassion will get larger and larger and larger and larger. And then when one's compassion is has come to fruition, full fruition, one will experience wisdom. And in this way, this is the sixth of the six perfect virtues is wisdom. And so you could see that wisdom, the wisdom that knows the twofold wisdom, as they talk about it in Buddhism, the wisdom that knows how all things appear and also the wisdom that knows how things really are. These two kinds of wisdom are what are developed from practicing generosity, from practicing ethics, from practicing patience, from practicing diligence, meditation. Those five of the six perfections produce the sixth, which is wisdom, which then floods the other five and makes them truly perfect. All of our attempts at generosity and so forth are kind of halting right now. They're not perfect, but we can slowly make them perfect by thinking, may this small good act that I am doing, may it expand and be of benefit to everyone. So that's a little bit about the six perfect virtues. And I didn't get to read as much Shantideva today as I would have liked to. Because six virtues means that I would have had to read from six different parts of the Shantideva book. I just caught a verse. Every now and then, do you do this? I open the book and I just say, well, what is the book want to show me right now? And it's about respect. Here's the verse. It's in chapter 6, which is as one of the chapters on patience. He says, the great compassionate lords consider as their own all wanderers. Of this there is no doubt. Beings, then, are the Buddha's very self. How thus can I not treat them with respect? So this is really, really interesting. It's interesting that this is the page I open to. The great compassionate lords, this means the enlightened beings, consider as their own, meaning their loved ones, essentially, all wanderers. The Tibetan word for this is drowa, D-R-O-W-A, drowa, which means those who wander. And wanderers are all of those sentient beings who live in this world with us. The insects and the birds and the creatures all of the beings who live in this world, they're all wandering. They're all looking for happiness. And so they're seen as a type of a spiritual nomad, if you will, that they're trying to find their happiness and trying to find their path to understanding and goodness. So since great compassionate beings of the Buddhas consider as their own, all wanderers, of this there is no doubt. In other words, all sentient beings are loved by enlightened beings. And then beings then are the Buddha's very self. In other words, the Buddhas love sentient beings as they love themselves, and that they are, you could say that they are part of the Buddha's heart. And thus, how can I not treat them with respect? And so, I think this is wonderful. In other words, all beings partake of Buddha nature. All beings have the potential to awaken. And because they have the potential to awaken, all are deserving of our respect. And so if we can practice with these thoughts in mind, this will allow us to expand our capacity to love, not just to love and take care of ourselves and our close ones, but also to have love and even respect for people who act badly. I know this is a difficult time because there is so much negativity in the world right now. And so many people feel free to express their hatred and denigration of others right now, that it is it does make the situation look a little bit depressing, if nothing else. But I'm always reminded of someone I quoted a couple of classes ago, which was, of course, the children's television host, Mr. Rogers, who said, when things are going wrong, look to the helpers, look to the people who are the solution to the problem. And so I think that's what we have to do right now, is we have to look to those who are providing the solutions to the problem. And the people who are providing solutions are saying that the solutions are going to come from knowing and understanding the pain and suffering that others are going through. If we can understand the pain and suffering of other people and find a way to impact that, then we need not feel like things are hopeless. I remember being a child in school and hearing about poverty and not knowing what I as a child could do. And then my service learning group in high school showed us that there was a way we could actually help young people, other young people who needed help tutoring after school. And so we were part of a tutoring group that tutored younger children in grade school after school. And it was like one of the most eye-opening experiences I had had in school, was to recognize that even big problems like poverty and illiteracy and difficulty can be helped by just small understandings of the sufferings of others. So I think that this is as far as we're going to go today. What I'll do today is I'll conclude today by leading a short meditation on Tonglen, sending and receiving. And then this will close out the conversation about Shantideva for the time being. There may be other opportunities for us to talk about Shantideva and his teachings going forward, because there are 10 chapters. There are 10 chapters in the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. And so I think there'll be plenty of things to talk about with Shantideva in the future. But I want you to make a note. And next Sunday, the 7th, today's the 7th of June, but next Sunday is the 14th. And the Sunday after that is the 21st. And those two Sundays, there will actually be a different person giving you the Dharma talk from Columbus Karma Takes and Trolling at 1 o'clock. And for that, you will go to the Columbus KTC Facebook page, or the soon-to-be-established Columbus KTC YouTube page. We already have a page, but we're going to start a new one this week. And Lama Tom Broadwater will be addressing the topic of teachers and teachings next week. I'm going to have two Sundays where I'm not with you. Sorry about that. I had to do time shifting because I have to give a talk for my Dharma friends in California, and they're 3 hours shifted from me. And so to give them talks next week on the 14th and talks on the 21st, I'll have to shift and not give this broadcast next week or the following week, but I'll be back on the 28th. Let's close out. I have to actually go get my book because I forgot to bring it. I have everything here but that book. So let me grab that. And I'll lead a guided meditation from Kempo Karthi Rinpoche's book, Dharma Paths. By the way, when I see all of the Tibetan texts in my credenza here, this is my shrine cabinet. When I see all of these Dharma texts here, I got to think of Kempo Karthi Rinpoche. Those of you who know him, he passed away last year, but those of you who knew him and loved him will have an appreciation for collecting texts. Kempo Rinpoche's room, I think he had an entire wall covered in texts. And so whenever I see all of those texts, I think about him. And I think it's really hard to categorize them, you know. Some of them are in all Tibetan too, which I can't entirely read. Okay, so right now we're going to do this short practice of Tonglen to practice sending and receiving. So first, place your body in a position of comfort and stability for meditation. And begin by relaxing your body and by becoming aware of your breath. You can do this by taking one deep breath, breathing out, and then becoming aware of the breath as it comes in and aware of the breath as it goes out. We'll do this for about a minute. Kimpur Bhajee's instruction on Tonglen begins like this. Breathe normally, following the natural course of your breath. Imagine that with the exhalation of your breath, whatever merit you have accumulated from beginningless time, are accumulating now and will accumulate in all future time, radiates out toward all sentient beings. Just as when the sun shines, the rays of light radiate toward all places, so with your exhalation, these positive qualities radiate, bringing happiness, well-being, comfort, health, and longevity to all beings without discrimination. Then, as you inhale, imagine that you are inhaling all of the suffering, confusion, sickness, turmoil, and conflict of sentient beings. All the suffering and turmoil of sentient beings merges with you, and this uproots the suffering and confusion of the sentient beings. Because of the strength of bodhicitta, the power of your sincere attitude of wanting to benefit beings, as soon as the suffering merges with you, it dissolves into nothing and disappears. It is just as if you had collected some dust into a little pile and a strong wind blew it away. Inhaling and exhaling in this way, meditate for a short time. So as you breathe out, imagine that like light, you are giving happiness to all beings and that it touches all beings everywhere. And as you breathe in, imagine that you're removing suffering from them, that it meets your bodhisattva motivation and then disappears, allowing you then again to give out on the out-breath goodness. So we'll do this meditation just for a couple of minutes. Kimpur Bhajee's instructions continue. After you have meditated in this way for a short while, let go of the mental focus and let your mind rest in a state of awareness. Attempt to have the sense that there are no sentient beings to meditate upon, there is no person meditating, and there is no act of meditation taking place. Try to transcend these three, which are relative, and give birth to something ultimate, something effortless and spontaneous like the arising and disappearing of clouds in the sky. Just remain in a state of clarity. There is no act, no thought of doing something outside or inside, no you doing something. Just cut off all of that and remain in a state of awareness. Okay. Thanks to everybody for sticking with us for the last 3 weeks as we talked about Shantideva. And what I'm going to do now is gather together the goodness of this and dedicate the merit, and we can do that together. And that we'll get together again on the 28th. I'll be back. And so meantime, I'll put announcements on my Facebook page, and we'll also put announcements on the Columbus KTC Facebook page. And that way you'll be able to join Lama Tom next week and the week after, giving talks on hopefully, things that will help us in our everyday existence. I think that that's one of the good things about being able to join you during these times. I'm so glad that we have the internet to help us stay connected during times of the public health emergency, and that we have time together to practice. So we'll gather all of our goodness together and make the aspiration that may all sentient beings be benefited, but most particularly those who have experienced difficulty, pain, and suffering in all of its forms, who have endured persecution of all types. May we understand them, may we hear them, may we see them, and may we become the cause for their freedom from these persecutions. I'll dedicate the merit using a Tibetan prayer. Or sonam de ye tam che se pani tob ne ne pedra nam pam che ne ke ga na chi pa lab ju pa yi si pe so le tro wa dro wa sho jam pa pa wo ji ta kem pa dan kan tu sam bo de yan de shin de de da kan gi je su ta lo ching ge wa di da tam che ra tu ngo. Okay, everybody, I'll see you next time. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.